Saswa is a podcast about Bigfoot. It's recorded for the skeptics, the believers, the knowers, and those who just have a casual interest in the subject. For more information, visit saswhat.com. This is Saswhat, a podcast about Bigfoot. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove, and I'm joined tonight by Mark Matsky.
Hello there, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Mark. And we are returning tonight to talk once again about Bigfoot. This week, we're going to talk about characteristics, possible personality traits, physical characteristics of a Bigfoot. And before we do that, Mark, how was your new year?
It was good. We got to spend some time at Salt Fork State Park, kind of a half-day deal. Went to some of the squatchy sites in the park and had a lot of fun. My father-in-law was with us, and our dog hit the trails and really enjoyed it. So it was a good day. We had the place to ourselves pretty much, so good way to start the year. Didn't see any exciting, tantalizing Bigfoot-esque clues, but otherwise it was fun.
Yeah, no smells, no odd smells again?
No, none. It was a cold day, so there's, it was pretty non-olfactory.
It does make you wonder, though, because I'm gone, but the smell's gone. So maybe maybe we weren't smelling a Bigfoot that day. We got a letter I'm going to read on the show.
Oh.
If you want to send a letter, you can send it to saswhatmail@gmail.com, and we'll read it on the air. I actually feel like we have two letters, but I'm not 100% sure. So, oh, okay. We did get another letter, but it was not for the show. It was for me. I'm going to read this one. This one says, "Hi, guys. My name is Jake, and I love your podcast. It makes the commutes to and from work one of my favorite times of day. But let's get down to brass tacks. First of all, I listen to other podcasts. He names a few. But what I've always thought was weird is how some of them talk about government special forces teams going in and taking out unruly Bigfoot. I served 4 years in the Marine Corps, and one of our staff sergeants was in the special ops community. And from things he's told me is that special operations primarily just perform observation posts. Don't get me wrong, there are some crazy guys, but I just can't believe that the government is using them to knock off Bigfoot. Also, why would the government hide the existence of such a creature? Yeah, I understand the whole no one will want to go into the woods again spiel, but why cover it up? And don't take me as a non-believer, I've never seen or had an encounter. But the thought of an undiscovered or undocumented animal is what intrigues me. And finally, I grew up in Montana, and I've hunted and fished my whole life, and it's totally possible that these creatures could exist. Just thinking about places like the Bob Marshall Wilderness, it's a congressionally designated wilderness area in Montana, and there are no roads in and around it really, and only a small landing strip for aircraft. Places like that, where literally no one goes in unless accompanied by a guide, are probably the best places to start looking. People who have never really lived in places like Montana or Alaska don't really grasp how much acreage there really is left undisturbed by man. All in all, I love the show and keep up the great work. I always sit waiting impatiently for the next show to show up. Sincerely, Jake." Jake, thank you for the letter. We love getting letters, and we'll read them. We want to start doing kind of a maybe once a month mailbag show. So if you send us letters, we might start saving them and putting them into one particular show, where we talk about this sort of thing. Mark, the conspiracy theories. What's your take?
Well, first of all, Jake, thanks for writing. I thought that was a really insightful letter and very thoughtfully composed. So thanks for taking the time to do that. It's interesting to me that with that input, as well as our conversation with Kathy Strain, it just seems to me like the people who we talk to, who either know someone or have actually served in or are serving in a government role, seem to uniformly say that there's nothing going on, that the government couldn't keep a secret if it wanted to, that type of thing. Now, we know that, that's not always 100% the case, but, you know, to directly to his question, I don't know really what to say about the conspiracies. It seems like, here's what it seems like to me. It's like answering a question with another question, or trying to explain an anomaly by using another anomaly to explain it.
Yeah.
It's like, it makes for an awesome story. And I don't know if I may have talked about the story that's in Tom Powell's book where, you know, they get a Bigfoot that staggers out of a forest fire and the government whisks it away. And then, you know, there's emails that are got, you know, sent back and forth. It's a great story, but there's no way to verify any of it whatsoever. So that's sort of my blanket statement about Bigfoot conspiracy, is that it's, you know, two unexplained for the price of one, and it makes for a tantalizing tale, but that's about all you can say about it.
Yeah, I think you and I have talked a little bit kind of off air about this, and I said the only way I see the conspiracy angle playing out and actually in a believable fashion would be if it was at very small scale. And what I'm talking is local government, local law enforcement doing something where, you know, maybe they have a Bigfoot on a dash cam and someone throws it away, you know, just to keep it quiet so they don't get a bunch of crazies in the area. And I base that on my experience researching things like the Minerva Monster case. But again, turning to the Minerva Monster case, that was a case that was covered by local law enforcement, and it was still very prevalent. It was out there. It was in the public's eye. So, I mean, if there was going to be a case where someone covered it up, that would have been the perfect opportunity for there to be a cover-up. I just don't see. Also, like he said, what would the point of it be? What would the point of it be? So people say, well, the logging industry would be affected, but it seems like, why would that affect government, you know? Why would government try to hide it up then?
Yeah, it kind of harkens back to the whole, there was a campground closed at Salt Fork because of Bigfoot activity story. You know, it's kind of the same thing to me. Why would they shut it down unless it was for safety concerns? But it just doesn't make sense to me, really, if you think it through. We cannot tell anybody about the existence of a giant ape-like, man-like creature because we're afraid that it might tear somebody to shreds. So we won't talk about the fact that they're out there, and we'll just let people go out there and find it for themselves. Mm-hmm. And that you know, something's wrong with that.
Not only that, but our government's pretty good about making money. They're also great about losing money, but. There would be an opportunity here where you would have Bigfoot sanctuaries, right? I mean, a Bigfoot sanctuary, or maybe even like a Bigfoot. What are those like where you drive into the park in your car and you drive around and you look at animals?
Oh yeah,
I mean we could do national kind of versions of that with the Bigfoots in the behind fences, and you could drive right through. And they might walk up to the car, maybe pelt you with a rock.
Right, you could have YouTube videos then of Bigfoot spitting at people through their window and stuff.
Yeah, it would be great.
And I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, so government, if you're listening, involve us in your shadowy conspiracy, and we'll help you sort out how to work your way out of it. So
right.
All right,
and sell the heck out of it, too.
Exactly. thanks again for the letter, Jake. That was great. SasquatchMail@gmail.com. Send us those letters. We'll read them. All right, so the topic of this week's show is characteristics of a Bigfoot, possible characteristics of a Bigfoot. We're talking about physical traits and different actions that are commonly reported in sightings. I'm going to let you start us off, and we're going to just kind of go back and forth and go over as many of these as we can before we run out of time.
Okay. Physical characteristics. Well, I think let's start with one basic one that comes up in a lot of reports, and it's the idea that Bigfoot has no neck, which I've also always thought is pretty intriguing and anatomically very strange. I think what people mean when they say that is that the shoulders and the deltoid muscles are so huge and so developed that it appears as if Bigfoot has no neck. And of course, there's the Patterson-Gimlin film where you've got Patty doing sort of that whole shoulder turn, which adds to that. Mm-hmm. But that seems to be one that we hear about a lot, is the idea that Bigfoot is neckless, which seems, it could be attributed to a number of different factors. But,
well, it's like we were just talking about before we started recording about gorillas with the deltoids, yeah, and the way they the massive it makes. I mean, just that alone on that known animal makes it look like it has no neck sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The musculature of those things.
Right. So that's, I would add to that too, I mean, since we're talking about sort of the upper body features of Bigfoot, the so-called sagittal crest or the cone-shaped head,
mm-hmm,
and that's not uniform. I mean, you don't hear that every time that a Bigfoot is sighted, but in some cases that is a feature that is reported and lending further credence to the idea, that we're talking about a primate, certainly, of some type.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all sorts of reports online, especially on the BFRO, with things like sagittal crests and that cone head. I mean, even Patty has that cone-shaped kind of head, too. Comes to that point,
Mm-hmm.
Very, very curious how those things happen. I want to talk about something. Earlier today, I was on Brian Brown's The Bigfoot Show talking about the Minerva Monster case. And, of course, the Minerva Monster case we talk about often on this show, and we would even if I wasn't directing a movie about it, just because it's a very interesting case in Ohio history. But one of the things that kicked that case off was constant reports of rocks being thrown onto the roof of the house.
Businessman, see anything unusual? How about now? The photographer, who remains anonymous, was never a Bigfoot believer.
I've never seen one, never believed in one.
But a huge stone thrown at him in the woods with no one else around changed his mind.
An object landed within 10 feet of us that I know of no human being able to throw it that far. There was one almost 10 foot tall, a family group drew in close, three of which got within 15 feet of me. Looked like something out of a Steven Spielberg movie. Right. I mean, not human as I know it.
Shelby County, this image of...
And rock throwing is one of those things that I don't think I was aware of it, say, like five years ago. I think what really made me aware of rock throwing was Area X. And they have all sorts of audio of rocks being thrown onto the roof of their cabin from the hill around the cabin, which is in the Wachita Mountains in Oklahoma. When did you become aware of rock throwing? Am I wrong? Isn't that? I mean, it's fairly recent. There's probably reports of it that go back longer than this, but it seems like this has only become very popular recently.
Yeah, I think in popularity, if you want to speak in those terms, that's been sort of a recent development.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking back historically, the one that comes to mind is Ape Canyon.
Mm. Nice.
Bombarding of the cabin with rocks, as well as just the creatures sort of hurling themselves against the structure as mm-hmm. part of that story. But really, as a behavior and something that you see reported again and again, that's more of a recent development. There's shows like we've talked about Monster Quest, and I think Monster Quest had an episode in Canada where there was a cottage of some sort, and they allegedly got some type of audio and video footage of the rocks hitting the roof of the structure there. That is definitely sort of a current stream in Bigfoot behavior.
Well, and the other thing is, what else could do that? There's, I mean, in the woods, if rocks are being thrown, if big enough rocks are being thrown at you or a structure that you are in, there's really only two things that can do that. There's humans and there's some sort of human-like primate that may be roaming the woods of North America. I mean, squirrels can, you know, squirrels will drop nuts and probably small stones. There's other animals. I know birds can drop stones. And when the other thing to keep in mind is when you're in the woods, there's a lot of stuff that falls out of trees.
Right. But if you see a rock come out of the woods and land at your feet, then it's just as you say, your palate is limited as to what could have done that.
Yeah.
And in so many stories, it sounds as if, you know, whatever's throwing the rock has pretty good aim because there seem to be warning shots, if you know what I mean. More instead of I'm trying to nail you with this rock, it's sort of I'm throwing this projectile in your general direction, hoping that you will move off.
Yeah, and
that's pretty advanced logic or thinking behind that.
Some of the NAWAC guys posited that it could be a show of power, you know, like a domination display. They, you know, maybe the noise hitting the rocks or hitting the roof or whatever could be a domination thing. I mean, I've always thought that part of the Minerva story is so interesting because you're talking 1978. There weren't a lot of reports of this going on. And it was something that Howie told us that they would do is they would mark the rocks that would come out of the woods and throw them back. And the same rocks would be thrown back at them.
Really?
Yeah. They would actually mark the rock with a Sharpie.
Oh, wow.
So I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah. As if that's just the right size of rock that they're looking for or something along those lines. Interesting.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Brian and those guys have talked about boulders being thrown in Area X. So once you reach that level, you're at another kind of scary precipice there.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You're moving into exist territory.
You are at that point, most definitely. Don't run into any park trailers at that point. That would be a bad idea.
I think what we're trying to get across here, too, is that the fact that so many of these things run across multiple reports makes them worth looking into. It makes them more believable as evidence. You know, maybe not some of these things we're going to talk about are a little more popular than others, like red eyes and that kind of thing, and even the no neck and the sagittal crest. But some things, and I'm going to talk about one a little later. It's such a small detail that I've heard mentioned multiple times that it does make you, you know, take stock, kind of look at the report on the whole and maybe give it a little more credence than you might have otherwise. So all these little things to me add up.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, I agree with you. At the same time, one question that I have is, do any of these things ever become sort of a copycat effect? Does that factor in at all?
It has to.
Like, you know, yeah, you know, at one point, you know, we didn't hear about a whole lot of rock throwing. Then it becomes somewhat popular. Then all of a sudden, you've got all these rock throwing reports from all over the place. And you can interpret that in a number of different ways. One being that, you know, somebody could say, well, I had this experience with rocks and I just thought it was weird. And I didn't really give it a whole lot of thought until I heard somebody else talk about it. And maybe that links in to the report. So I'm not saying that people hear about a certain facet of the report and then just make it up out of whole cloth, but it just makes you wonder, you know, to what degree does it?
It has to happen.
Shake out.
It has to happen. I'll point toward the next thing I was going to bring up. I didn't mean to step on your toes here, but I was going to move on to wood knocking. There, the best example of wood knocking being a common hoax now. It would be Salt Fork State Park. Mostly because, and I don't even know if you can say the word hoax, because I think a lot of times it's probably just Bigfooters stepping on other Bigfooters' toes. But there are wood knocks all through Salt Fork. And I'm not saying that some of those couldn't be real, but most of the time I'm going to bet that it's some guy either having fun at the expense of other people out Bigfooting, or it's a Bigfooter hearing another Bigfooter.
Sure.
Yeah. And I believe that, that wood knocking is probably a trait, you know, that could definitely come from one of these creatures. And there are cases of primates using wood knocks, you know, mm-hmm. other than Bigfoot. What's your take on wood knocking? I know we've talked about it. I know that you do the world's greatest tooth pop.
Yeah, that's, you know, it takes a lot of practice to finally craft that sound. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, wood knocking. You know, I only heard about that for the first time in the mid to late 80s and through a book that I've talked about a lot, which is the Bigfoot book where Alan Berry talks about the Sierra Camp and things like that. And he has an awful lot in there about wood knocking, and that was really my first exposure to it. At this point, I just wonder, you know, given how widespread it is, as you mentioned, as a, I don't know, just a, if you would call it a research, what would you even call that? I mean, it's trying to provoke a response.
Yeah, exactly. And
if you are a secretive creature that's trying to escape attention, and all of a sudden you start hearing a lot of people using your secret language, don't you think you would adapt and maybe start doing something differently? Mm-hmm. I mean, wood knocking to me, I know, I mean, primates do it, and that is, you know, you can prove that. I understand that. But at a certain point, it becomes a real question for me of how effective would that continue to be in highly populated areas? I mean, if it's not very populated and there aren't a whole lot of people out there doing these sort of complementary sounds, then maybe they still utilize that as a technique. But I would have to think that after a while, they would get wise to the fact that there's human beings out there who are knocking against trees, and certainly they have to know the difference at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
They figure it out.
And so
the jury's out for me as far as wood knocking is concerned. Because you can, that sound could be replicated also by other, you know, other things going on. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a big question mark for me.
I like the idea of wood knocking being related to not so much communicating, just to communicate with each other, but to communicate, you know, specific things or to warn as a warning shot. You know, the idea that we can go out and just do a wood knock and we're going to get getting like a friendly wood knock in return is just kind of silly to me. And I've always,
yeah,
I've thought that for a very long time.
Yeah. And I guess that's sort of the level of what, at which I was thinking about it.
Yeah. But there are quite a few wood knock reports. I was looking up BFRO reports, and I mean, they're all over there. The number of times someone has seen a Bigfoot making some sort of wood knock seem to be few and far between, though.
Right.
So
see, and I guess that's where I end up is, mm-hmm. until we see one actually, you know,
exactly.
with stick in hand.
Yep.
It's an assumption.
Yep. All right. What else do you got?
Well, can we talk about eyes?
Yeah.
Or did you want to save that?
No, let's talk about eyes.
Okay. We encountered something. It was about 35, 40 feet away, and there two eyes were peering out low down in the brush. I thought maybe it was maybe a reflectivity of something else, but after 30 seconds, the head started swaying back and forth.
And I'm looking at maybe a 7 or 8 foot tall beige gorilla-looking man.
But we saw a bright red eye glow.
But I know after looking at it for 29 seconds, I started to cry, and I could not hold the camera anymore.
This guy was seeing something, and I didn't want to see it at that point. I've been interested in the Sasquatch phenomena, but I didn't want to see what he was seeing because...
The eyes of Bigfoot, you know, there's a range of what Bigfoot's eyes do, everything from glow red, independent of a light source. Then you've got more of a eye shine type situation. I've heard reports of yellow eyes quite a bit, sometimes green. So there's a range of, the phenomena related to the eyes, and it's just interesting to me to note that that is definitely not uniform mm-hmm. across reports. What does that suggest? I don't have any idea, quite honestly, but, they run from everything from just regular eyes that are very human-like all the way to continuously glowing red, which suggests a couple different things, and none of them are really that comfortable of an idea, I think, for anybody. So it's weird. And certainly, if you saw something with independently glowing red eyes looking out at you from the woods, that would be a memorable occasion, to say the least.
Yeah, and it's the strangest thing about it is almost unanimously, and I've talked to three people who've seen the red eye shine, mm-hmm. personally talked to three people, and none of them said it was eye shine. Like, it's not eye shine. It's literally the eyes are glowing red.
Yeah.
And this would, again, this would include the Minerva case, which mm-hmm. is, although their glow, if I remember right, was more of an orange, but it's still mm-hmm. in that, you know, I've heard Scott Harriet on the Bigfoot show, he's talked about it as being almost like a exit light in a movie theater. Like, that's the kind of illumination it has. It's a very soft, but illumination. And you know, the thing about the glowing red eyes is to me it's one of the more like fanciful
mm-hmm.
It's almost embarrassing when you get into a talk about it with someone, you know. Well, it really is, because it's one of these things that you can't point to other cases in you know, the natural world and be like, well, you know, the tiger's eyes glow red too, because it doesn't happen. So
mm-hmm.
it's one of those strange, but you're right. This runs the gamut. I mean, there are a lot of reports with it. I don't know. To say a lot might be what do you think it is? Maybe like 1 in 4, 1 in 5, something like that. I mean, it's a total guess, but it's not every nighttime report.
No, it's not. It's not. And I just wonder, you know, what would the advantage be
mm-hmm.
to having a glowing eye like that? I don't know. I have no, you know, lacking in biological
looks
knowledge.
Cool. Looks really sure. cool.
Yeah, right. I'm going to flip them on. then that raises other questions. I mean, are they always incandescent like that? Or is it during the daytime you just don't notice it? Or can they turn them on? And what's the advantage
point
to having
them? What is the natural, what is the point of it? Biologically,
right,
what would be...
Yes. If we're talking about a flesh and blood creature, what's the biological advantage to having glowing eyes, especially if you're a predator?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that give you away?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And, you know, what I would like to hear is a natural, an alternate explanation for why people see it. I mean, if these mm-hmm. are real, if the creature is real and people are seeing something glowing red in the eye area, you know, what would be an alternate explanation for it? And I've mm-hmm. heard some different, you know, explanations. Usually it has to do with some sort of sickness that affects the eye membrane and turns it red, but it's not quite what I'm hearing described when people talk to me about it.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's the thing. Eye shine to me is very reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I buy that completely.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not that I don't buy that people saw what they saw. It's just I want to know why.
Yeah.
Why is it doing that?
Yeah. We really need to get a body in here. I mean, us personally, we need to have someone bring us a body so we can dissect it. I'm just kidding. I don't mm-hmm. want anything to do with an actual Bigfoot body, please. Something I wanted to talk about that I've noticed just recently is this report of Bigfoots running away. And there's off the top of my head, the one that springs to mind is Kathy Strand's account, where she saw this Bigfoot running up a hill.
Oh, yeah.
And she described it putting its head down, arms at the side, and kind of puffing its almost like it was moving with its arms. I don't even know how to properly describe mm-hmm. that. But you know, I mentioned on the show kind of like a linebacker, and she thought that was a good, you know, example of it. And now I've heard that same description given to one of these things running multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that really interesting because it's such a small trait to pick up on. And for me to have heard it now probably three or four different times, and, you know, Kathy Strain's account from Area X, I don't know that it's all that popular. I would think outside of the Bigfoot community, no one has probably heard of it. So it's odd that you hear about it and then you'll hear about it again in a report on the BFRO. You know, it's such a tiny little thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, just their locomotion in general is kind of fascinating to talk about, too. But mm-hmm. just when in her report specifically, she said kind of tucked its arms in.
Yes.
To go up the hill. Mm-hmm. And just sort of the legs just, you know, pumped away, and it just seemed to fly up that hill. A person could go up a hill, but not with the same ease.
She described it as almost like it was attached to a bungee cord.
Yes.
And someone pulled it up the hill. I mean, mm-hmm. that's how she described it. All right. You wanted to get into vocalizations. We've got a couple minutes, so let's do that real quick.
Okay. Yeah, this is another case where it seems like, you know, from the legend standpoint of the Bigfoot story, there've been various vocalizations, and just the screams in the night, and sort of the classic woman being murdered sound, which are the Bigfoot vocalization show that we did do, and some of those recordings of just actual known animals are pretty chilling.
Yeah,
like what was that? That
the fox makes the really kind of high pitched sound. There was the one that you and I both thought sounded almost like or maybe it was Brandon and I thought it almost sounded kind of canine like, but that mm-hmm. fox makes that loud, kind of eerie, high pitched wail noise.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whale noise, but you know what I mean, a whale.
Right. Yeah, yeah, and the mountain lion too. I think was mm-hmm. that the one that really sounded like it sounded very. There eerie. Was human elements to it,
definitely
that could really creep you out if you heard that out in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, we get into a, you know, is there a feedback loop here where, you know, one person reports one type of howl and then other reports come out about a very distinct howl sound versus a scream. And then, you know, the thing with Sierra sounds and so forth, and not just Sierra sounds anymore, but like a proto language or something of that nature
mm-hmm.
is, I think, to me, that's some of the most interesting stuff. As weird and out there as it may seem, mm-hmm. I mean, Ron Moorhead is very insistent that he's had that checked out, you know, at the university level. And when it came back, the whole idea of that was the person who evaluated that sound footage was pretty convinced that it was some type of proto-language, and that the size that was necessary to make the sound that's heard on the recording was outside of the human range. So I don't know if that is, you can equate that to samurai chatter or not, but it presents a pretty interesting picture that this creature is not just screaming in the woods, but when there's more than one of them together, they may in fact be able to use some type of spoken communication with each other, which raises all kinds of exciting possibilities if even just a little bit of that is true.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the talker tape from Ohio too, and I'm going to play it here because I actually found a clip of it today. So that's another odd kind of vocalization, almost like a language. And I've asked multiple people about that recording because I'm very curious if other people think there's any legitimacy to it, because it kind of falls into that Sierra sounds camp. But all right, we're going to have to wrap this up. We are barely scratching the surface, so we're going to have to come back for a part two. We'll add this to the ever-expanding list of episodes we're going to have to do sequels to. So, final thoughts, Mark, on traits, character traits.
It makes sense to me that there would be some uniformity, and at the same time, there be differences in details that are reported. You know, if we're talking about a real biological creature, then there would be variation. We'd expect there to be, you know, regional differences, and you know, in hair length, and you know, average height, and even smell, which we didn't talk about that, did we?
No, we didn't get into it.
So I don't think it's not troublesome to say that, you know, the Bigfoot that was sighted in California doesn't look the same as the one that was spotted in North Carolina or West Virginia, because you know animals aren't the same everywhere in a cookie cutter fashion. So I think it's those regional detail differences that make the search so intriguing.
Join the conversation at facebook.com/sasswhat. Find us on Twitter by using the hashtag sasswhat, or you can find me on Twitter at Seth Breeds Love. Mark Matsky is on Twitter at Reverend Matsky. Send your letters to sasswhatmail@gmail.com and leave us a rating and review on iTunes.